is Migraine, episode 362. I'm your host, Hector. And on this episode, Jason and I get into some of the stuff we've been getting into recently, TV shows, movies, and music. And thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. It means a lot to us here. So without further ado, here is episode 362 of the Mind Grenade podcast. Doing this episode, you might ask, Jason, is that you, Ian, and I did an episode last week, and we mm-hmm. did it on this new software you've introduced me to, Riverside FM, and you sent me the link. Remember, we were having, or at least there was an echo from one of us. I forget, like, that we weren't sure if it made it into the recording or not. We were just gonna. So that was a good episode. We hadn't done one in a group like that, especially with Ian, in a while. So it was cool to do that. But when I went to start editing it, I fucking deleted it. It was completely fucking gone. So I didn't even fucking get to listen to it to see if the echo was still in there.
Oh, no.
So, okay. I just fucking... Because it was a decent episode. I thought I liked the... I mean, it felt good while we were recording it, the conversation. We mentioned it, various different things, video games and TV and stuff like that. And then, it was, like I said, it was the three of us, and we hadn't done one like that in a while. And I was like, fuck yeah, I put this episode out. But then, man, I went in there to start editing it, and I deleted it. And I was like, man, I'm not going to beat myself up over this. That fucking sucks. But I was thinking, one, for this episode, we can just shoot the shit and just bullshit about any particular thing. Doesn't matter what it is. It can be pop culture or not. But also, let's try to remember. We don't have to go into it as in-depth as we did on the last episode, but just like here and there. Like, for example, you brought up Masters of Air, Austin Butler, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's on Apple Plus, like Apple.
Yeah, Apple TV series. It's on the 100th Bomber Group that was stationed out of England. From the very beginning, we were trying to get air superiority mm-hmm. so that we could make groundfall to Europe. And they called them the Bloody 100th, not because they had the most casualties during the war, but they had like the most during a short period of time.
Okay.
The show is more visual than storytelling, but like it tells its story through its visuals, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
So it follows this whole group. You've got three main characters that you follow, a couple of pilots, and then a navigator. Navigator Major Crosby is the guy that a lot of this stuff is based off of because he wrote books after the war. So a lot of this, what it's showing you is just a regurgitation, basically, of what happened.
Okay. From the books. From using the books as a source.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it doesn't take a ton of liberties. So it's not going to be the most twists and turns mm-hmm. and love stories and all this other stuff you can get from a typical TV story. Mm-hmm. But it really shows you what it was like for them. Mm-hmm. And it's very compelling in that way. From just behind the scenes, getting these planes ready, getting up, doing these missions, coming back with half or more than less than half of what you left with as far as the crewmen and the planes.
Right.
These guys that had to abandon their aircraft and then try to find their way out of Belgium or Germany or wherever they fell down and escape through these underground channels or become POWs and things like that. So you get to see a lot of that stuff, and the visuals are fantastic.
Okay.
That is really the reason to watch this.
Okay.
More so than the characters and the storyline itself.
Okay, awesome, awesome. And it's like limited series. Like, is it like the Band of Brothers? Right, it's the same team that brought.
Yeah, it's Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg. Yep. Mm-hmm. So it has a definitely top quality visual aspect to it. Yeah, it's a limited series. I don't think we're going to get any more. You start from the when these guys were stopped in at Greenland, was it? I think. And then they went over to England as they were shipping over there and starting their missions from the time the war ended.
Yeah. So
in one series, you kind of do a large period of time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it is going to be just a limited series.
Masters of Air. Yeah. It, you just reminded me of Dunkirk. Have you watched Dunkirk?
I have watched Dunkirk.
Yeah. There's aerial stuff in there that's pretty amazing to look at that I've been to air shows before, but like, I don't know, like they can capture some really cool shit, you know, with cameras and stuff. I think with Dunkirk, I think it was IMAX cameras and stuff that they were using for that. But you guys have been you and the crew over at Listen Impossible. You guys have been putting on episodes and fucking. just reminded me with the Masters of Air coming back with half your ship or your airplane, you know, your plane or whatever. Putting the podcast together, there's always going to be like, it's not the first time I've done this, but like, I might have done this once before where I just like fucked it up. Either the technical difficulties, you know, you run into, oh, the recording's corrupt. It's just fucked up. Like you can't, right. It's unusable. I've ran into that before, but I think I've accidentally deleted something. With Riverside, once you delete it, there isn't like a trash can where it went, you know, like a recycle bin that it goes to where you can recover it, which is fine.
Sure.
I tried, okay. Which is fine. I take full responsibility for fucking that up. And like I said, I was trying not to beat myself up too much about it.
Right.
But,
we'll categorize that under shit happens.
Yes, yeah. And I think I've done it before. Do you have any stories of like, kind of like, fuck, like, you know, any, with just podcasting in general, have you had any like faux pas like that?
Yeah, our very first episode of Listen Impossible, something happened with my microphone and I thought I had fixed it and I didn't test it again. And my audio was pretty low quality for that very first episode because I was just kicking myself and I was like, God damn it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was usable, but when you put out your very first episode, you kind of want your audio to be clean. Right.
Right.
So
yeah,
it wasn't the greatest first step, but it's whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's tricks you can do for editing and stuff when you have technical difficulties, like something fucks up, one of the mics goes out like during a recording, and then if you notice it, then you can like take the time, you know, write down where the fuck up was and then fucking edit together and you can salvage stuff. But like, it just sucks when something, especially if it's a good episode, you're like, oh man, we captured lightning there, and they're like, no. But there's like learning experiences doing all this. This is great. The Riverside's fucking great. Like, before I was just like FaceTiming people in on my phone and plugging that into the side of my computer or the soundboard. But this has been working out great because then, our audio will be separate. Like I did notice you can get it together, combined, or the separate files. And then you can like adjust. I noticed on Audacity because I'll edit there. If I'm recording on Riverside, I'll send it over to Audacity and then I'll start editing it and manipulate, you know, trying to get the levels. There's a one thing I just fucking learned was, Amplify on Audacity will help out. But what you don't want to do, you can go overboard with it, of course, with most of the settings on there. You can like, the spikes will go kind of surpass the whatever you call it, the track, I guess. But it can help. on there. So that's one thing I've learned that, yeah, because, man, it fucking sucks when I think you and I, well, we did that episode with my brother for Sublime, which was a fun episode, and that one turned out fine. We did that one on Riverside. And Riverside, for people listening, is like a, you can use Discord, you can use Skype, you can use, there's different ways to do it, because you're in Illinois and I'm down in San Antonio and Texas right now. So we did an episode prior to that. It was just the two of us, and it was the episode with just the two of us before that Sublime, and the audio was you're editing it and you're like, okay, that sounds good. And then you send it to whatever, Apple Podcasts, or, you know, to the Apple aggregators or whatever. And you're like, God damn it, the fucking volume. Like it doesn't sound, you switch it over to another podcast and they sound loud and crisp. And then you go back to your own podcast and you're like, God damn it. So, yeah, it's always kind of just figuring stuff out and, getting it better. Cause I mean, this isn't monetized, but I want to make a fucking decent product. Like, I want, you know, and if the technology's there, then why not? So, but, in World War II, you didn't have drones and Wi-Fi, you know, like,
right.
Reminds me now, the World War II stuff. You've not, well, I bring this up on every fucking episode since this movie came out, but, Godzilla Minus One, it was set in World War II, like right after, like, I mean, days at, like, you know, months after, like, it just happened. And the main character in that movie is a kamikaze pilot that, this isn't going to ruin the movie at all. This is going to actually kind of get you even more excited to watch it. Like, cause the story is just so compelling, but it's about a kamikaze pilot that, doesn't like sees it's a losing war, like they're losing the war, and his government is telling them go fucking go run into a fucking another plane or a fucking battleship or whatever, and he doesn't do it. He comes back to you know, to Japan when he was supposed to come, you know, kamikaze himself, and he was like, oh, they ask him what happened, you know, and he's like, and this is the very beginning of the movie. He was like, oh, I had a malfunction. It didn't, like, the plane was malfunctioning. They run tests on the ship, on the airplane. His airplane is Zero, right? Isn't that the name of the Japanese, like, single fighters? I think they were called Zeros.
That sounds familiar.
Right? So, he comes back, like, they found out that was full of shit. So he's got that shame from his fellow airmen and the people, you know. And, anyway, it just reminded me of the old, it's just crazy that, like, with the technology we have today, that people would get, like, you know, in airplanes back then, especially the dogfight and stuff like that. It's fucking insane. Yeah.
Well, you know, we'll never see air battles like World War II ever again because we have drones and we have these long-range stealth bombers and all this other stuff. So you're not going to see hundreds and hundreds of planes in the air battling out at the same time because it's just not necessary anymore.
Right.
Like, you can bomb the same area with three bombers than you sent 40 during World War II. 50 of them. Hundreds of them.
Yeah.
And then you're not going to risk that many people now in modern warfare because you just don't need to. Back then, man, you didn't have – the Germans had one jet engine fighter plane, I think it was, or some plane. It didn't work out very well. At the time, the tech was kind of rudimentary, and it almost had a hard time battling against the regular engine planes.
Yeah.
It was just fast, and it wasn't as – they just didn't have it down right. But being up in like those flying fortresses that were basically aluminum tin cans
with
engines strapped to them.
Yeah.
And having that flak explode in midair and metal just cutting through your plane like butter is just, you can't even fathom what that experience was like for them.
Yeah.
And those flying fortresses were designed they had four engines. So they could stay up in the air with one engine left.
That's wild.
You were in trouble.
Yeah.
You were slowing down, but you could stay airborne
yeah.
and you could land with one engine.
Yeah.
What the Germans tried to do to our Flying Fortresses a lot is that they protected themselves in numbers before they could get those P-51s, those mm-hmm. fighter planes that were famous back then. Before we had those, which were longer range, and we got closer into Europe, the fighter escorts had to bail before they got to their targets because they just didn't have the fuel
mm-hmm.
like these large bombers did to get there.
Mm-hmm.
So their defense mechanism was just this machine guns from all angles.
Yeah.
So you had your pilot, your co-pilot, and your radio guy were the only people in that plane that didn't also have gun duties,
yeah,
whether
yeah,
it was
yeah.
your tail turret, your top bottom, your ball turret, your chin turret, all these things. So your German aircraft
dirty.
Were just met by a wall of fire.
Yeah, yeah.
So not only was it scary for the Americans, but the German pilots were just attacking into a wall of fire. So they actually got more points by getting a bomber to what they call leave the box.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to get these Flying Fortresses out of formation,
mm-hmm.
because once they left formation, they were extremely vulnerable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because
sounds
they
like
didn't
it.
Have the protection in numbers anymore.
Yeah.
It was just the scale of the battles and what the entail is was so different back then. It's just crazy.
These very big planes and the bombers, like the C-130, like these big planes have been like being retired, like not like in recent decades.
Yeah.
Like,
there's less than 10 Flying Fortresses that can still fly.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, I forget which is the biggest one because I was an airman in the Air Force years ago, and I worked on F-16s, and they've been trying to retire that. For, like the F-22, I think, it's been its replacement, but this shit doesn't just, like, overnight get, like,
right.
mothballed. It takes, you know, it's piecemeal. And the 16, I'm proud of that. I loaded munitions and stuff on 16s, and it sounds fucking cool to say. So, like, I'm proud of it. But it was fucking a cool jet, but it had one fucking engine, which is, mm-hmm. like, kind of crazy when F-14s and F-22s and F-15s have two engines. If one goes out, you're not just dropping out of the sky. But
right, those were powerful engines.
Yeah,
you're talking about the tech, man. Like, I don't want to come across like the Air Force now is spoiled because that's not what I'm getting at. But like the climate control now, like to keep yourself
yeah.
like back then when they were up in the aluminum tin cans over France and
little
winter,
shit like that. Yeah,
it got below zero.
Yeah.
in those things being at high altitudes. There was a scene where a guy, I think, like pisses himself and then gets frostbite during the battle.
That's embarrassing, it's just not health. Like you're
yeah,
also,
God,
yeah.
it's just awful.
Well, that's a kick in somebody when they're down. Not only do you have to face the shame of having pissed yourself as a grown man, but you're also going to get frostbite too, like physically, like it hurts your ego and your body. speaking of modern warfare. So I moved down here to San Antonio, and I'm just getting a little bit comfortable from the transition. And I've been like dying. Like if people are still listening, like there's been a disruption in the episode output in the last couple months, and it's because of this move. And I've been trying to get back to like normalcy and get the podcast back on track, and then everything else in my personal life, including playing video games. One of the things, going back to the episode that I deleted, we brought up video games. Ian went down kind of a quick little hit list of mm-hmm. the stuff he's been playing. But then, you had mentioned that, your son has been bugging and you had brought it up years ago. I even remember you bringing it up. It's like, once you get your internet straight there at the house that you were wanting to get a next gen, like the whatever's current, a PlayStation yeah. 5 or a Xbox, whatever the current Xbox is, which is what I have. But tonight, I'm definitely going to be playing some Call of Duty because I just, like, I haven't played any video games in, like, months, which I'm not I don't play video games every day at my peak of playing video games. I do, like, a couple hours on the weekend. But I get my, you know, you just have to blow off steam, right? Like, especially Call of Duty, like a war game, you know, World War II, shooter or something like that, or Halo or whatever it may be. Like, that's what I play video games for, is to get in there and get some headshots and then get it out of my system. I'm good to go. And so I'll be doing that tonight. But so what are you thinking of PS5? Like, I'm sure you're considering what games are in each, because PS5, right. PlayStation has those Spider-Man games that everybody's been fucking raving about. So I'm guessing that's probably where you're leaning.
I think it's what Ryzen's leaning towards.
Yeah.
I was leaning towards Xbox, mm-hmm. because of my Gears of War franchise.
Yes.
I heard that they're in the making for another one.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to let go. It's one of my favorites of all time. Mm-hmm. So we'll come to agreement. I'd rather not buy both of them because, you know,
yeah,
in economic times. Yeah, just I don't think we'd get the use out of them to justify doing that at all.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we'll come to an agreement here soon, I'm sure.
Yeah,
he's gonna want one rather than none, so we'll figure it out. I may cave because he'll play it a lot more than I will. So.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. Like, it's funny how World War II is like the go-to. You know, mm-hmm. like. Especially with this, like, with Call of Duty, I prefer the World War II versions of Call of Duty over either that or modern. I don't like the advanced stuff. But
it gets super crazy with the weapons, and then you're in space and all that.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, if I want to do that, I'll just play Halo or something like that. Have you been watching any Halo? Like, did you continue watching?
I did.
I'm not watching any of it, but
I started season two. I think season two is an improvement over season one. I liked season one, but I found enough issues with it where I was like, if they don't make any steps forward in season two, I may let it go. Because, you know, we only have time to watch so much stuff. Mm-hmm. So, and I really liked it. I feel like they listened to the criticisms of mm-hmm. season one and tightened up the storytelling a little bit. And I thought season two was an improvement. And I enjoyed the shit out of season two.
And it just finished? Like season two.
Awesome.
That's good to hear. Like, yeah,
the way it finishes, it makes it seem like that they're planning for more. So
okay,
that's all I'm gonna say. But.
Okay, yeah. I've not watched any of it. I've seen trailers, especially for the push for the second season. Like, it was like one of the main Halo characters, you know, with the armor on a battlefield with other. Well, I don't even know what they call the good guys in that. They're like Marines or whatever. I don't even know. But they were fighting the alien guys with the fucking laser sword. That's always been that's a thing about Halo I've always appreciated. It's the design on stuff is very fucking cool. It's the Needler, right? The fucking gun that, mm-hmm. yeah, it's yep. just cool shit like that. Staying with the video game stuff, adaptations, what was it? So that one's doing well. I've heard only good things about Fallout. I've not played the game. Oh yeah.
Okay.
I hear it's hardcore.
I think this might be one of the best video game adaptations I've ever watched.
Wow. Your boy's in it. Your guy, Walton Goggins is in it. Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's not why I'm saying that.
But
he's excellent.
But of course, he's always excellent. So, yeah. I don't blame you I don't blame anybody for being a fan of his. But go on.
No, I just think they captured the tone, and every character that they readapted for the series is interesting. Like every single one. There's not a lot that you look at and you're like, now I will say I'm not a diehard fan of that. I have fucked around with those games before, but I'm not a diehard Fallout fan.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be curious to hear from somebody who is.
Yeah.
But man, this is such a great show. There's the visuals, the way they use retro music, the way that they kind of advance technology from a retro aspect into the future is mm-hmm. interesting.
Yeah, right.
Just
right.
like everything they
because it has a 50s like it has a 50s kind of aesthetic, but it's also futuristic where there's like
exactly
robots
yeah,
and shit,
the technology
right?
has
yeah,
at the
that's
same
very
time.
Interesting. Yeah.
yeah. So it's really cool, and they use Lucy the Vault Dweller as their main character, which I feel like was a good choice.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think like the Vault Dwellers were a good storytelling starting point because they're some of the most interesting parts of the game. So,
it's a chick protagonist. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's too woke for me. Then no, I'm just playing. That's so stupid. Anyway,
and then you got the ghoul, which is played by Walton Goggins, and then all these other characters. Yeah, man. It's the finale. I watched it all. I didn't keep. I fell behind on some of my Listen Possible homework because I just couldn't stop watching the show. But the finale's not maybe as grandioso as you would want it, but it's solid. It's good. I think that they didn't want to like have this overseen like grand ending because I probably realized that they were really onto something and they just didn't want to just final end it. You know what I mean? Like they probably wanted to keep going with it. So you could end it, but I mean, it's the story looks like it should continue. I would be shocked if they don't continue this series. Yeah. It's just got such great momentum after season one.
Yeah.
Pressure's on.
Yeah, the video game adaptation might just replace the whole comic book thing. Like,
that's gradually what I was saying. Yeah,
gradually getting better. The Gears of War, like a TV series, like that, or even a big blockbuster movie or something like that. You know, it feels like something like a Gears of War, the TV versus a movie. Like, it seems more vulnerable to getting like fucked if they try to make a movie out of it. Where there's more of a chance of it turning out well or good, at least if it's a TV series.
Universal Studios got in on the Gears of War franchise a few years ago early, and they bought the TV rights or the big screen rights for it. I don't know what they're going to do yet, but I keep hearing that movie is what they're leaning towards. Which is fine.
I mean, done well, it could be awesome if they make a movie. It's just it's easier to fuck up as a movie. I feel.
I agree. They seem to be, you know, with The Last of Us and
yes,
you know, Halo's
The Last of Us
kind
is
of
the
on
other,
the right
yes,
track now.
Right.
It seems like they've got a better grasp on how to do this now.
Yeah. And do it well. Did you see the casting for the Fantastic Four? Speaking of The Last of Us, Pedro Pascal is going to play Mr. Fantastic.
I haven't seen all the casting, but I did hear that he got cast in that role.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
It's so he's Mr. Fantastic. Vanessa Kirby is the Invisible Woman. And then the guy from The Bear, the cousin. I forget that.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, he's playing Ben Grimm. The Thing, and then. Some kid that's popular on Stranger Things is going to play, Joseph Quinn is going to play, the Human Torch. Let's see what else he's been in. He's a British actor. He's in Stranger Things, of course. He was in, Overlord, which I think is a World War II action horror film. Yeah, Overlord, he was in that. He's going to be in A Quiet Place Day One. He's going to be in Gladiator 2. But anyway, this young kid that was in blew up on Stranger Things is going to be Joseph Quinn is his name. He's going to play the Human Torch. But yeah, Pedro Pascal isn't my I think he's fucking great. Like I love that he's in a bunch of stuff in the Mandalorian. And I haven't watched The Last of Us, but I hear he's fucking excellent in it. But I wouldn't instantly think. Pedro Pascal for Mr. Fantastic, but that casting is a wait and see for me. Like, I'm just going to wait and see if it, I mean, I'm sure it'll do fine. Vanessa Kirby, I think, who was in the Mission Impossible movies, she's fucking, that's an excellent fucking choice. I've liked her in those movies in particular. She's been like in two or three of them. But she looks like, the character from the comics and stuff. And then I was making the joke earlier about, the woke stuff of putting a female protagonist in place for the Fallout series. Like, when it comes to casting in the Fantastic Four movie, like, I don't care about most of the, like, if they go against type, especially Pedro Pascal's Chilean American, so he's Hispanic, and he's playing what's traditionally a Caucasian role, but I don't care enough of like put a black person in there, an Asian person would have been cool for Mr. Fantastic. But really, I don't care about the swapping. Like recently, people were kind of bringing up that Silver Surfer in this movie is going to be female. It's the girl that was in the Ozarks, which I've not watched, but apparently she's going to play the blonde young girl that's in the Ozarks. She's going to play Silver Surfer. So of course, there's people that are like, why are they, you know, the MCU instead of the MCU? It's like, oh, whatever. Like, I don't care enough about the gender swapping on that character. Like, as long as the character is cool and honors the character in the comic, then I'm cool with it. Like, I don't care. But the one thing I am particular with the Fantastic Four casting is that the Thing, Jack Kirby and Stan Lee created back in the 60s, the Thing is blue-eyed, which is like, he's blue-eyed and he's Jewish. Like, that's been tradition, like, that's part of the character. And Eben Moss Bacharach from The Bear, the guy that got cast as the Thing, is both Jewish and has blue eyes. So I'm super happy with that. Like, but the more importantly, he's a fucking great actor. He was in The Bear, or he still is. And then he was in what's the Star Wars show? The really good one that came out a couple years back.
Andor.
Okay, do you remember in Andor where he was like, they're trying to put a team together to go in and raid a place? Mm-hmm. Like, he was on some planet, like some foresty right. type planet, and there's a crew of people, and there's the one asshole guy. That's Eben Moss Bacharach, who stars in The Bear and has also got cast as Ben Grimm in the Fantastic.
Right.
And he's excellent in Andor. He's excellent in The Bear, and I think that's the most exciting casting for this MCU movie, which comes out in 2025. So we get Deadpool Wolverine this year for the MCU, and then next year we get the Fantastic Four. But the crazy thing is too is that James Gunn is making the Superman movie right now, and Superman and the Fantastic Four, the MCU Fantastic Four, are supposed to come out the same month next year. Like, the two big kind of big gambles for both, because the MCU hasn't been performing as well, you know, as it did in its heyday.
Right, right.
And the DCU just is getting rebooted with the Superman movie that James Gunn is spearheading. So both are exciting, but they're both kind of having to prove themselves. You know, a Superman movie isn't the easiest thing to, like, you know, the character gets criticized for being kind of just a bland character and whatever, and what can you do with a character that powerful? And then the Fantastic Four also, they've yet to make a good Fantastic Four movie. This will be the fourth one or the fifth one, something like that.
Yeah, and
so, and then the MCU, and then the MCU has been struggling the last couple phases. So both movies exciting and they look promising, but they both have something to prove to audiences. So we'll have to see. So it's pretty exciting.
And you said the same month, right?
Yeah, I think it's like June or July of 2025. Yeah.
Now, I would understand that they want to do summer, but it's interesting that they want to head-to-head themselves like that. You would think they want to avoid each other.
I bet the closer it gets to it, I bet one mole kind of, like, they're playing chicken. They do this. They did this with Captain America and Batman v Superman. One of the Captain Americas, like either Winter Soldier or Civil War, and Batman v Superman. At some point, one of them just backed off. I forget which one. I do want to say it's a D. I'm leaning more towards it was DC, but yeah, it's
But yeah, you're right with the Pedro Pascal thing. It's just because you have a great actor doesn't mean they're a great fit for a role.
Right,
it doesn't always work out. So it's interesting.
Yeah,
like Fallout had this guy playing Maximus. He's like a squire. Ends up being one of those, you know, those armored titans in the game.
Yes, right.
This guy's name is Aaron Moten. I've never seen him in anything before, and I'm sure he's been in stuff, but I've never recognized him.
Is it Aaron? Two A's?
A-A-R-O-N, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
M-O-T-E-N. And he plays such a complicated, interesting character in Maximus that, like, sometimes you feel like you want to like really like the character, and sometimes you don't. Like he plays that character so like with such depth and complication to it. Like I really like what he did with that character.
He's one of the characters when I've been hearing people talk that it took a minute to appreciate. Like at first you're not sure, and
yeah,
then...
because like he plays the character in such a complicated way, mm-hmm. which the farther the show goes along, you kind of understand why the character's a little weird and quirky, mm-hmm. like considering the character's background, mm-hmm. And what that character you find out as a young boy went through, mm-hmm. you kind of understand why he is the way he is. And you're like, oh man, like he's purposely playing this character kind of odd,
yeah,
you know, and it's like I by the end, you're right. In the beginning, I was like, I don't know how to feel about this guy. Is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? Is he somewhere in between? And then at the end, you end up understanding him, and it's interesting. And you still like have these like in the backdrop feelings like, would he still betray somebody? Like you still aren't quite sure about him, but you feel like you know him better.
Wow.
So, yeah,
that's impressive because I've not watched the show, but hearing you talk about it, like. That just instantly wanting to discredit a show that's based on a video game just because it's based on a video game isn't fair to, because I mean they're like The Last of Us I heard was pretty gripping, and this sounds like a real fucking show, like despite the fact that it's based on some IP that's a video game. But I'm sure the video game, I mean there's plenty of examples of video games really going in story wise like Mass Effect is one of them. I've never played that, but apparently the lore, the mythology, and the fucking world building on that is very like deep and complex. So and The Last of Us, I've not played that video game, but I hear it sticks to pretty closely to the story of what the video game, the source material had. But it's pretty impressive that I guess it's the same thing with comic book movies and stuff like that, where it's like, oh, it's just based on a comic, but, like, you know, but you can still make a Logan or, you know, a movie that's, like, has, you know, that's, can
and
be taken more seriously. Yeah.
Games. Yeah, sorry, I didn't.
No, please.
That some of these newer video games have a lot of story to them,
because mm-hmm.
Some of them, you know, you make decisions in the game, and sometimes the story changes, and mm-hmm. they've wrote arcs for all these characters and stuff. You know, when we were growing up, these little side-scrolling, bouncing around games, you didn't necessarily need all this background. And if you wanted to, sometimes your magazines or like mm-hmm. an insert in the video game would tell you about them.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't like embedded in the game because the games just weren't advanced enough to have all that stuff in there. You didn't have cutscenes and stuff like that until...
Yeah,
maybe Nintendo 64 kind of did a little bit of that with some of the drop dialogue and stuff.
That was such a big deal when we were growing up, when suddenly these little cinematic kind of pieces got added into the video games. You'd just be so impressed. And then magazines, too. Like, I mean, we've got the internet now, but that was a whole thing. Nintendo Power and Electronic Gaming Monthly, Game Pro. Man, I would just... eat that shit up and just like figure out what games are coming out soon, what special codes, you know. So it's pretty exciting that, because I know Nintendo is really getting behind after the success of Super Mario Brothers movie, which any kid, Ryson's age, my nephew Desi, like, I'll ask Desi, I was like, hey, what kind of, because we've been doing, me and my brother and his family down here, we've been doing a movie night every other weekend. And my nephew, Desi, he usually like foregoes like the movie night. Like he'll just go stay in the kitchen and play Roblox or whatever he's playing and with his friends online. But I asked him, I was like, what's your go-to movies? And Mario Brothers, that's the godfather to kids that age apparently now. Like, which is awesome because it is a great movie. I enjoyed the shit out of it, like, when I watched it. And it had everything. Like, it wasn't trying to be anything else other than a Mario movie. Like, it wasn't trying to be super extra complicated and try to, like, it had all the stuff that you would want out of a Mario movie. And then dazzling fucking CGI and fun character voices and everything else. But it stayed faithful to... what we know from the game. Like, it wasn't trying to be something it wasn't, which, right. Yeah. So, but also, and more importantly, kid, you know, 13-year-olds fucking think it's The Godfather, which is fucking awesome, you know?
There's an art form to those all-ages movies, which is what Mario Brothers was. Mm-hmm. You know, have a plot there. You got to have one. And then the foremost is just to have fun, right? To make it flow, to have fun, and to make everything bright, colorful, and funny as well. Like, don't overdo the humor, but also don't, like, miss on it either. You know what I mean? Like, there's an art form to that kind of stuff to make it not only, like, a great watch for kids, but a great watch for your 50-year-old that played Mario. You know what I mean?
Right. So, yeah.
They got it right, I think.
So on that last episode that we keep referring back to, you brought up the Ghostbusters movie, and it was Frozen Empire, I think that's what it's called. There's two movies with the subtitle Empire. It's Godzilla versus Kong's New Empire, whatever that one's called. That Godzilla Kong movie also knew what it was, which I appreciated. You know, when you can tell they know that it's not supposed to be Shakespeare, but they're going for it, and they're saying truth to the IP or what their vision of it or the type of movie they want to make. But, like, you brought up the balance of, like, making a movie for kids and for adults. The Ghostbusters movie, like, they've been trying, that franchise has been trying to, like, capture that first movie, which I don't blame them for. That movie was, you know, a cultural thing, you know, at the time. And it was, I mean, they captured lightning in a bottle with that one. Like, I mean, the same way Star Wars did, the first Star Wars did, they captured, you know. But
I feel like Frozen Empire's problem is that they tried to backpedal too much to where Afterlife felt like moving the storyline forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Egon's gone and his house is left. And you still have all this other stuff going on that he was working on, trying to prevent some of these things that happened before from happening again. Like, the story was moving forward, and it felt like in Frozen Empire, it was trying to reel you back into the old stuff again, where it's like, here's our old firehouse. Here's some of the old characters. Here's, like, here's the ghost containment unit. We're going to do all this stuff again. And it's like, why is that necessary? Like, I can understand, like, making it, like, put the firehouse into the, like, story somehow, but it felt like they were trying to recreate Ghostbusters itself, but with just new people. Like, you're like, okay, they're going to live here again. They're going to try to fight ghosts. And then all of a sudden, here's Kamui Nanjiani and this firebending character that made no sense to me. I'm like, oh, man. Like, I felt like they had the right direction. In
the right formula for the previous movie. Like I said, you have to know what you're making. You have to know what you're making and go for it and not try to, like, piece something together from, like, you know, because there's a right way to do nostalgia if that's what you're trying to do, or at least it doesn't have to be. I think the proper approach is to have that balance of bringing some nostalgia in, but not fully relying on it entirely, where you're just trying to recreate that first movie. Just have it be an ingredient in the meal, like in the full, you know, recipe. Don't let it be the entire recipe. With the nostalgia, like, do you have that in? Have some fucking, like, shots of the of Slimer or whatever, you know, whatever stuff. But just, like, that Afterlife movie, I think they did a great job. They took it out from New York. It was out in the, like, Midwest, I guess, right? The Afterlife. Mm-hmm. But they captured some of that feeling from the first movie that we were chasing. Star Wars will do that every once in a while. Even in the shows that aren't as strong, like I capture, like, Ahsoka at points would make me feel like I was watching A New Hope. mm-hmm. or some of the other movies. Andor was kind of reaching for that 70s style aesthetic when the original Star Wars movies were made. J.J. Abrams did that with Force Awakens, where he was trying to use practical effects rather than like go full CG. So it's possible to do it right, but yeah. But also you have to like balance it, like, you know, like don't fucking just like rely entirely on that, where then it's just a string of just nonsensical stuff strung together just because you're just trying to, you know, get the dopamine hits with the nostalgia.
And the nostalgia stuff was fun in the Ghostbusters mm-hmm. movie, but like the new stuff that they tried to introduce mm-hmm. just didn't all feel natural.
Yeah.
So what you got left with remembering was the nostalgia rather than the new stuff it introduced, mm-hmm. if that makes any sense. So, yeah. You know, it's not a terrible movie. I don't want to make it seem like that. It's just an okay movie.
Yeah, yeah. You know, one thing I've been really surprised with, and it has to do with nostalgia somewhat, mostly, really, is this new X-Men series that's on Disney Plus, X-Men 97, mm-hmm. the sequel, reboot, whatever. It's not a reboot. It's like a direct like continuation from the show. So when that show premiered back in the 90s, I was already aging out of cartoons, like Saturday morning cartoons at that point, but I had been reading X-Men. I was already fucking locked in with the X-Men. X-Men's like my favorite superhero comic. Like I love it. Like it's like, that's my jam. Like I fucking love the X-Men. Like, but the cartoon was the adaptation of what I had already been reading in the 90s. And in the 90s, that was like the heyday. That's what this series is kind of like emulating. Well, it's X-Men 97. But like the costumes that they're wearing in this TV show are those costumes that were made popular in the 90s, but with Jim Lee was the artist and Rob Liefeld and those guys, Mark Silvestri, the artists that were working at Marvel. But I don't have any kind of connection to the cartoon, but over the decades since I started reading comics, when I was like 16, to current day, like over the years, I've been hearing like, especially millennials, rave about like that was their jam, the cartoon back in the 90s. Like they had never read the comics, but they watched the cartoon and they fucking like, dun, 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 the fucking the theme song. That theme song is amazing.
It's like, pretty iconic.
Yes, it's pretty awesome. So I was like, oh wow, they're bringing back the X-Men, that iteration of it. So I've been hearing the internet just fucking go ape shit over this cartoon, like the revival of it. And I was like, well, I have Disney Plus, and I'll watch a little bit of it, dude. I'm blown away how good this show is. It's fucking like, it's that dopamine hit of that nostalgia of like when I was not watching the show back then. Like I said, I didn't watch it, but like the stuff that they're capturing, from the comics, like just the vibe, the characters, like they're just getting them so right. Magneto, Rogue. The stuff with Cyclops and Jean Grey, and Jean Grey having a clone, like Cable, but they're also getting like the story, the soap opera drama of it just right, the way the comic books had it. Like, I don't know. Like, again, I can't speak to the first five seasons that premiered back in, you know, the 90s, but this stuff now is fucking incredible. Like, just blown away. I wasn't expecting it to be this good. And it'd be awesome if they somehow, because they're going to be introducing, we got a Deadpool Wolverine movie coming out in a couple months. Like, yep. The MCU is like they're ready to introduce the X-Men. They're already introducing the Fantastic Four next year. And they should figure something out with this cartoon. Like, somehow... get it, like the multiverse stuff, like get these characters or somehow get the feeling, the vibe that this show is putting out there and somehow translated that into the MCU, into live action movies. Because it's fucking amazing. The same thing they should do with Spider-Man, with Miles Morales, with the Into the Spider-Verse. When they eventually bring Miles Morales, like a live action Miles Morales, fucking get whatever that flavor, whatever that vibe, that essence that you're getting with those animated properties, somehow get that into a movie, because it's working so well for Miles Morales and the X-Men. And I just shocked of how good both those properties are doing. But I think we'll probably wrap up here. But you brought up on that episode we deleted, I was trying to implicate you in that I deleted. You brought up some music that you were going to be talking about on Listen Impossible.
Oh yeah,
and we don't have to get too into it. I don't want you.
No, that's okay. Yeah, no. Wren is a Welsh artist.
Wren, okay.
Yeah.
Do you spell it with a boy, W or R-E-N?
R-E-N.
Okay.
And he's from Wales. He's an interesting artist. He's like a rap guy, but some of his music he puts out is almost like, I can't remember what that poetry is called when they do it to music, like the background music, but there's something that they do. But he's like a guitarist, a bass guitarist. He can play piano. I think he can do percussion, and he can produce like electronically. This guy can do all kinds of shit. And his music is, they call it alternative rap because, it's just kind of like, what do you call it? Mm-hmm. Kind of like that 21 Pilots thing when they first came out. What do you call them?
Yeah.
You know, they do all kinds of different things. Mm-hmm. He sings a little bit, but he does a lot of rapping in his stuff. He's an interesting artist that I just kind of stumbled across, so I thought he'd be fun to talk about. Yeah,
right on. What else you got coming up on Listen Impossible, so we can send people that way? Tease some of them.
So we're gonna talk about Cocaine Bear.
That's right.
Shortly, and then season 2 of Invincible.
Yeah.
I think Green Day's new album, we haven't dropped that one yet. Okay. So that's going to come up here. A lot of people probably expect me to rave about that album, but that's not exactly what I did.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
So it's an okay album, but it does feel like Billy Joe's doing a lot of old man yelling at cloud stuff in that album.
Okay.
And it's just all right. It's Revolution Radio is probably the last album that I really liked.
Okay, that was a couple episodes back.
Father of All Motherfuckers, I didn't like at all.
Yeah.
This album was all right. It was a step forward, but still going to be at the bottom of all my albums, is what I kind of mentioned when we recorded that episode. So,
okay.
You know, it's a band that, when Dookie came out, they had their emergence. Mm-hmm. They, you know, them, Offspring, and Blink-182 kind of popularized punk music, all three of them together. Mm-hmm. And then they had a commercial success boom with American Idiot. And then they had that Broadway play based on that rock opera that they produced.
Yeah. Where do you go from there? Like, conquered the world, essentially. And
yeah. And then so they're just kind of on their downward trend of their career now. As a Green Day fan, I'm not afraid to say that, but that just kind of, they haven't done another reinvention of their music or themselves yet to kind of give them another third life. And years of high level success.
That's what I was going to get to.
Might be good enough. They're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for a reason. So.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. It's like, again, with the MCU, I always use this example. They gave us fucking 22 fucking good to great fucking movies. It does suck that they're stumbling now, but like, I can't hate them. Like, they knocked it out of the park, like, consistently for a long fucking time. And we can go back and re-listen to Insomniac or old Green Day albums or
Nimrod
is the one I was just struggling with just a moment ago. I was at a Starbucks last night that stayed up pretty late. I was out and about, and I was like, I'll stop in the Starbucks. And I was like, holy shit, it's like, this one's open at 11:30. I'll stop in there. They were open. I went in there, had my espresso and an old-fashioned donut that they still had that late. I was surprised because none of the Starbucks out here ever have them. They're, we ran out at 9:30 in the morning. I was like, 9:30? It's like, good Lord, like, Make sure you have enough donuts for me when I get here. But this one had my coffee and my donut, and they were open till 11:30, and they had some cool music playing, and they had like, it might have been like six or seven people kind of all on their laptops, two people right there on their laptop, one person over there by themselves reading a book. It was a really cool, like, nice little setting. And I was like, you know, I'll hang out here and just fuck around on my phone for a minute while I drink my coffee. And they were playing some cool music. And I was like, what is this? So I Shazammed it, of course. So Crystal Castles. And do you have any Crystal Castles on your iPod at work? Because I've heard, I mean, it's not the first time I've heard of this band.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I don't think so, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Right. So I Shazammed it. And they were, I guess when it was that late, it was just the baristas that were like running a couple of baristas that were running the place and not a manager. So one of the baristas might have just had a playlist going because it was playing Crystal Castle songs like back to back. The first one I heard was called Sadist. The second one I Shazam was Crime Wave. And then the final one is Intimate. And this was last night. So probably I might do a deep dive, like on Spotify or whatever and find other music. But it's, let me see what kind of a description here for Crystal Castles. It's kind of electronic, maybe European, but it's a duo. Not European, Canadian. It's an electronic music group formed in 2006. I don't know if they're still together or not, but it's 2006 to 2017, so apparently they're not together anymore. But yeah, the genre is electropunk, electro clash, synth pop, and witch house. I'd never heard that. Witch house is a micro genre of electronic music that is musically characterized by high-pitched keyboard effects, heavily layered bass lines, and trap style drum loops. While it aesthetically employs occult and gothic inspired themes. It's pretty interesting. Witch house, sometimes referred to as drag. So anyway, but yeah, Crystal Castles. And then you said Rengill.
Yeah.
Ren.
And one more thing I should mention that I mentioned last episode is that we're also going to have an episode on Bo is Afraid coming up here. I mentioned that last recording.
Yeah.
With Ari Aster and A24.
You convinced me from that episode. I'll be watching that very soon. It raised up. So, Joaquin Phoenix, Ari Aster. So I know which streaming service I'm gonna have to buy, unless I already have. It's not on Disney Plus, is it?
Right. No. Right now, Showtime owns it.
Okay.
The streaming rights to it. Yeah. But I wouldn't be surprised. It's probably gonna end up somewhere else soon.
Yeah.
Definitely be able to rent. But
I'll just probably end up renting it. But Bo is Afraid. Yeah.
I think I did a Showtime free trial or something to watch it. I didn't expect to love that movie, but I did. And if you look at the Rotten Tomatoes, you're going to be like, oh, well, the Rotten Tomatoes aren't bad, but they're not all that impressive. Because it's like, if you watch the movie and you don't really get what Ari Aster is doing, you're going to come away and be like, what was that? But if you get it, it is fantastic.
It's not horrible Rotten Tomatoes on the audience.
Yeah,
or the
The visual portrayal of the false narrator of somebody who has mental health issues because of a terrible relationship with his mother.
Yeah.
The way they visually portray him going through all that stuff with him, visually putting things in his environment, that are scary, him, constantly getting hurt physically. So it's the whole movie is almost a physical manifestation of his inner struggles. Yes, there is a plot line to it. His mom wants him to come visit him, but this shit keeps happening to him and he can't quite get there.
Huh.
And then, I don't want to give the whole movie away, there is a plot. There is a plot there and it's got a twist. Joaquin Phoenix is just great in this movie.
Well, that, Joker trailer, the sequel just dropped and that looks very interesting too. But, so that's something, listeners can look forward to on, Listen Impossible for you guys to be, discussing.
Subtle comedic chaos is how I would describe the movie in short.
Nice tease. Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Cool. All right, man. We'll wrap it up. And then the last thing I do remember from that episode I deleted was that there was a radioactive solar eclipse that I was trying to get to bite me so I can get its powers. and it didn't work out. All right. So, yeah, you can find Listen Impossible anywhere finer podcasts are found. And for all things Mind Grenade, like a feed of the podcast, my art gallery can all be found at mindgrenadestudios.com. So thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. This has been Hector for Jason saying so long, and we'll talk to you soon.